Eva, Autumn, I usually get a chance to speak in the daylight.
There's good reason for that, especially with all these devices that I don't usually allow. They keep on coming. So when Rabbi Olshan asked me to speak, he thought it would be a good idea to try to give maybe some motivation to guys who are not coming back Shinabat, which right now it's about 98% of the yeshiva, I think. And at the same time, to also try and give chizuk to those that are coming back and those that are on the brink. So I'm really going to try, in the short time that I have, to speak to those of you that are going to be going out of yeshiva and back to the secular world. And anything out of yeshiva is the secular world. Doesn't make a difference where you're going. Try to give you guys chizuk, even guys who are coming back. You're leaving soon for the summer. I'm actually coming at a bit of a disadvantage because I never went to college, as most of you know. That's why I don't have a biography on the, you know, the Torah Chicago website yet. So one day maybe I'll be Zilcha. But I did have the experience, though, of leaving the yeshiva world. This is going back about 11 years ago, after high school, spending 5 years in Yeshiva Gola and many different yeshivas. I said goodbye to the yeshiva world. I thought at that time for the last time, and definitely never expected to be over here. And that's when I joined the army. So I'd like to share with you maybe some of the experiences that I had, not necessarily going to college, but leaving the environment of these four walls, and some of the challenges that I had to face, and tying it in hopefully to this week's Parsha, Bamidbar, and tying it into Shavuos as well, and come out with one message that everybody can take on their own individual path. Rav Balbi in Ali Shur speaks about the challenges of leaving yeshiva. One of the first things that he says is that you're going to be faced right away with people who are going to scorn you. You're going to have friends who didn't go to yeshiva. You're going to have your parents. You're going to have relatives. All of a sudden, they're going to start looking at you like, oh, you're wearing that thing on your head now all the time, and you have the strings, and you're davening a little bit. And you're going to be ridiculed. And people are going to wait for you to slip up. When I joined the army, it wasn't so pashut as it is nowadays. The Haredim, you know, are all going to the army. And my parents actually had a fear of, you know, who's going to want to marry me? And, you know, they were right. But Baruch Hashem, it worked out okay. But not only that, my parents had forbid me from wearing my uniform coming back from base into a religious neighborhood. They felt that I would be in danger. I was like, I have a gun, you know? What do they have, some rocks and whatever? But Baruch Hashem, I'm saying that it wasn't nearly as bad as people thought it was going to be. And not only that, but a lot of times when people try to ridicule you, so you're ashamed of what you're doing, so you try to fit in and blend in. Where really the greatest thing you can do for yourself is, even if in yeshiva you weren't wearing your tzitzis out, when you're in college, wear them out. You weren't so careful on dressing as a Ben Torah, when you're in college, dress more as a Ben Torah. In the army, I took upon myself two things, which I had not done before. One of them was wearing my tzitzis out, and I wore them out all the time. I had a Chabadska with me in the army who insisted on having tzitzis out. Now, when you're in the field, and everything has to be camouflaged, you can't wear white. They actually got for the whole unit green tzitzis. So that we'd be able, guys were able to wear out green tzitzis because it blended in with the uniform. And another thing I did, like I said, I was growing a beard. I did not have a beard before I went into the army. Some people are disillusioned. They think that people grow a beard so that we have an extra 7 minutes to smoke a cigarette, which is true, but that's not why I did it. Rather, I felt that I wanted to keep the appearance of a Ben Torah when I went into the army. And I felt that having a beard would remind me of that. And it really worked. It helped. When I left base and my tzitzis were out and I had a beard and I was wearing a nice big yarmulke, I felt that not only was I not making a chilul Hashem, but I was making a tremendous, tremendous kiddush Hashem. And all those people that my parents and family were worried about that might scorn me or look at me negatively, actually, there was no problem. There was a lot of respect and maybe even some jealousy. Another issue you're going to be faced with, obviously, is dealing with the opposite sex, with women. Now that's something that, you know, at some point you're going to get married. Bezrat Hashem, halachically, to the right type of person. Okay, so you will, at some point, need to interact with women. I'm not telling you should do it, as Rashi would probably tell you he never did until he met his wife, but it's something which is unavoidable when you're in a secular environment. And if you're not living in Eretz Yisrael, where there are specific workplaces that are only women or only men, you're going to have to deal with it. And again, people try to blend in and fit in. And I want to share with you maybe two extreme cases that I had. Being in a religious all-male unit, there were some extremists on base. And one time, one of my soldiers was guarding the gate to the base. And a young lady came from a different base and she wanted to see a doctor. Because we had the only doctor in the Jordan Valley for miles, and she wanted to see a doctor. And he said, "I'm sorry, no women are allowed on the base." At that point, I gave him a command, and I said, "Open the gate, let her in. Otherwise, I'm going to lock you up in a gate, in a very small one." He's like, "But what do you mean we have rules?" I'm like, "We have rules, but you also have a bit of a seichel. If there's a girl who's sick, who needs to see a doctor, maybe Casey, what right do you have not to let her see a doctor?" Meaning, just because, you know, you're religious and you're trying to keep halacha, doesn't mean you have to be crazy.
Gemara mefureshet, chassid shaita.
Chassid shaita. I'll give you another case that I had, not in the army, but I got to meet Myra Kraft for the first time. Allah shalom, quite a number of years ago. Her husband is the owner of the New England Patriots. He's worth quite a lot of money. Very wealthy, they are Jews, and they give a lot to Eretz Yisrael in different places.
That's Kraft Stadium?
That's Kraft Stadium. So the first time I met Myra Kraft, she came and she put her hand out to me. And I didn't take it. Now usually I try to go into these meetings like holding a bunch of stuff in both hands so like I don't get put in awkward situations. But I didn't have that ability. I didn't put my hand back out. I was wearing a yarmulke, you know, in my coach's uniform. And she says, "Oh, you're one of those religious people who don't shake women's hands?" I said, "No." I lied to her. I said, "No." I said, "That's not why I'm not shaking your hand." I said, "The reason why I'm not shaking your hand is very simple." I said, "When I met my wife, I told my wife that she would be the only woman I ever touched because I love her so much and I respect my wife so much, and that's why I'm not shaking your hand." So she calls over her husband and she says, "I just heard the most beautiful thing I've ever heard. I wish you would be more like that." Sure. But I didn't have to let her know that. All right? But as we've heard in the past also, if you go and you let your guard down, you break it one time, somebody sees, it's very hard to pick it up afterwards. So you really have to try as much as possible to keep to halacha and not cut any corners. Another thing that you realize when you leave yeshiva, and especially for you guys who came in knowing nothing, was when you leave you realize how little you know. Even a person who grew up in the yeshiva system, spent many years, over 20 years in yeshiva, when I left yeshiva, all of a sudden, I had to deal with halachic questions that I never even thought of before that never came up because, you know, I was in yeshiva all the time. Whether it was, you know, cooking on Shabbos, showing up to an army base. We were in southern Hebron one time, and there was a caravan where soldiers stayed, and the army provided pots and pans, which we couldn't use them, so we didn't know if they were kosher or not, or what was cooking them. Had a kosher kitchen, all these different things. You're going to be in an apartment with, you know, or in a dorm room with people that maybe aren't Shomer Halacha like you. And there are things that come up. In Shabbos, you might be cooking for yourself, putting up food. You need to learn, know all these halachas, what I can put on, what I can take off, right? What I can cook, what I can't cook. There are so many questions. And if you really want to be able, especially in the army, pikuach nefesh questions, and going into cars in Shabbos, and carrying guns in Shabbos, and all these different things, you need to have a Rebbe. You need to have halachic Torah authority who you can stay in touch with at all times. But I think the biggest challenge, and I've mentioned quite a few of them, is time management. No matter where you are, whether it be Shenabet, YU, NYU, Maryland, wherever it is you're going, time management is so essential. I hear guys all the time like, you know, "Rabbi, I wanted to learn, I just don't have time, my schedule's crazy." And my answer to them usually is, "Did you go to the bathroom today?" Okay, I'm not going to ask you how many times. "Did you eat today? Did you go on Facebook today?" "Yeah." "Did you watch your Us or HBO show today?" "All three of them." "Yes." "Okay, but you don't have time to learn today? You're telling me in your busy school, I need to have time to relax after..." I'm like, learning is relaxing. Like, what's the problem? 5 minutes, 10 minutes, half an hour? But people who don't start their schedule, built in already, wherever they're going to be, with those starting that they need, they're not going to end up doing it. And usually you hear a concept that people like to throw at you is Osik b'mitzvah, patur min ha-mitzvah. Right now I'm in college. I need to, you know, get a good degree so I could have parnasa. That's a mitzvah, right? Which it's hashtadlus is not a mitzvah, Rav Dessler says. He says it's a klala, okay? It's a man's curse from Adam HaRishon when he sinned. The man now has to work.
And the Gemaratinus.
Gemaratinus also.
It's
called Pasim Chumash. Also Pasim Chumash. I obviously have to put in more time. But, all right? You hear Osik b'mitzvah, patur min ha-mitzvah. Now, in the army, this was like really a big line. Like you got back from, going into some village at night. You got to sleep for, you got back at 4:30 in the morning. There's one minion on base at 8 o'clock. But you're getting back on duty at 10. And if you wake up, so, you need your sleep. Osik b'mitzvah, patur min ha-mitzvah. Right? Guarding Israel, mitzvah, not mitzvah. Whatever it is. Right? They wake you up, minion, come back, in a few hours. And a lot of people threw this, and unfortunately for a while, I was one of them too. But I believe I might have shared this story with you, with some of you at least, but I'll tell you anyway. So it was after one of these times, I was after a 72-hour mission, okay? Hadn't showered, hadn't slept, hadn't done anything, and I got back to base at about 3 in the morning, and sure enough, this rabbi walks into my room, and he's like, Fuchs Takum! I'm like, what do you want? He's like, we need you for a minyan. I'm like, Osik b'mitzvah, patur min ha-mitzvah, I'm tired, haven't slept in 3 days, I'm going back to sleep, I have to be back on duty later. He's like, no, you don't understand. There's nine guys, we need a 10th guy for a minyan. Now, I really wasn't like in the mood, but if there are 9 guys who want to daven, okay, fine. I throw on some clothes, I go to the shul, and there's nobody there. It's just the rabbi and me. And he says, well, if you're already here, maybe we can learn something together. I said, I have a gun in my hands, and you're really giving me a very big nisayon over here. And this is very difficult. I said, Rabbi, you have 2 minutes to blow my mind away, or I'm blowing yours away. So I told him. I said, you have two minutes. Now, I will tell you that the only reason I'm here today is because of what this rabbi said in 2 minutes. Okay? And he quoted for me Gemara, which is probably also a pasuk, with the story of Rabbi Akiva. After Rabbi Akiva gets married to his wife, Rachel, who came from a very wealthy family, and she was cut off by her father, and the Gemara relates how they're living in a barn, and how every morning Rabbi Akiva would take the straw out of his wife's hair, and eventually one morning she just, she couldn't handle it. It was too tough for her, coming from, living in a mansion to sleeping on the floor. And Rabbi Akiva turns to her and says, one day, when I'm really, really wealthy, I'm going to buy you Yerushalayim Dadava. Yerushalayim Dadava was this jewel, it was like a crown. Engraved in it was like the walls of Jerusalem. It was like the most precious thing you can possibly get. And for some reason, I'm not sure how that works. And it, calms her down a little bit. And the Gemara relates afterwards that there's a knock at the door. And it's Eliyahu HaNavi, who's dressed up as a poor man. And he says, my wife's about to give birth, next barn down, and we don't even have any straw to lay her on. Can you spare some straw? And Rabbi Akiva turns to his wife, and I don't recommend you ever do this to your wife. And he's like, ha-ha, you see? There are people that have it worse than us. And then she says to him, oh, remember that promise you made me? The one day you would go to yeshiva? Now I want you to go. And that then begins the story that you all know, where he goes, fails, sees the water hitting the rock, right? We'll talk about that maybe if we have time. And he ends up becoming the great Rabbi Akiva. And he asked, he said, what from these two stories, right? Him promising her the greatest jewel, and then him realizing that they at least had straw, how come now she tells him to go to yeshiva? And he said, I'll tell you why. From the first story, she saw that her husband had ambition. You're sleeping on the floor. Maybe promise your wife if you have some money, you'll get her a new shetel, you'll get her, a bath, a good dinner. No, he wanted the best. He wouldn't settle for anything less than the best. However, from the second story, she saw that he was able to appreciate what he had too. Look, I at least have straws. There are people that are worse off than me. And those two midos don't usually go together. Usually a person always wants more, is not happy with what they have. And usually a person is happy with what they have, doesn't necessarily strive for more. And when she saw that he had these two qualities, she saw, now you have what it takes to become a gadol. Because in learning, right, on the one hand, a person always wants to learn more and more and it's never enough. Sometimes you can become very dejected. There are so many books out there. In your life, you're never going to learn them all. the more you learn, the more you realize you don't know, right? On the other hand, you have a guy who's like, wow, I just did 2 prakim in Masechet Shabbos this year, you know? I really worked hard. I'm good for the next 20 years. You're not going to get anywhere either. So when she saw that on the one hand, he always wanted more, but on the other hand, he was able to appreciate what he had done already, right? I've learned 2 daf, I've learned 3 daf, but I have more to go. That's not going to deter me from continuing, but it's also not going to prevent me from appreciating what I've done in the past. She said, now you're fit to go to yeshiva and learn. Because that's the recipe for success. And that's a message which really stayed for me for a very long time. And from that moment, I had on my phone throughout 3.5 years in the army, words that he told me that one of the Lubavitcher Rebbe said, I'm never satisfied, but I'm always happy. I'm never satisfied with what I've done. I mean, there's always more to do, but I'm always happy with what I've accomplished. But I think there's a deeper lesson here. The Baal HaTurim in this week's Parsha says that the Torah is compared to Mayim, right, which represents Anava, modesty. It's also compared to Eish, fire, which is Gaiva. It says, how can those 2 things coexist? How could a person have Gaiva and have Anava? It says, the 3rd thing is the Torah is compared to the Midbar. Meaning, if I make myself like a Midbar, if I myself am nothing, right, then all I am is because of the Torah that I have. There's a story there of Gusman at 16 years old, who was known to be a tremendous genius in learning. He once came into Beis Din, and Beis Din stood up for him. And he said, you know, please, please, I'm only 16. You shouldn't be standing up. Like, we're not standing up for you. Like, we're standing up for your Torah. So if a person were to realize that I'm nothing without Torah, Torah is what makes me. I have nothing to be proud of. I could have college degrees. I could have PhDs. I could have everything. But I don't take any of that with me. There's no kavod in that. It's a job. It's things that you have to do. But my true kavod, what gives me that eish, is the fact that I have Torah. I have Torah to share. I have Torah that I've learned. And it's already inside of you. Rabbi Akiva, later on in that story, he meets up with his father-in-law years later. And as I said, his father-in-law had disowned Rachel, his wife, and him. And he felt bad, I guess, for some reason. He wanted to see his daughter. So he wanted to be poseach neder. He wanted to annul his vow. So you go to a gadol, and Rabbi Akiva was there. He did not know that this was his son-in-law. And he says, you know, I made a vow years ago. I disowned my daughter. I'd like to be poseach that neder. So Rabbi Akiva says to him, if you would have known that your son-in-law would be a huge talmid chacham, would you have made that vow? So he says, the talmid chacham, if you would have been able to read a pasuk or learn a mishnah, I would have made the vow. Rabbi Akiva says, in that case, you know, I am he, mutterlach, it's fine, you're good. Tosos asks, he says, we know that you can't annul a vow with a davar shelo bala olam. You can't annul a vow with something which wasn't present at the time that the vow was made. And at the time that the vow was made, Rabbi Akiva could not learn chumash, could not learn a mishnah. And Tosos says, you see, that already inside of him, the potential was already there. And therefore, it was a davar shelo bala olam. Which basically means that every single one of us, when that malach touched us on our lip, after we learned the whole Torah and forgot it, but it means the potential is already there to learn the whole Torah. You have it built inside of you. You're a Torah learning machine, and no matter where you are, that potential will always be there. The question is, are you going to go and take it out? I basically have 2 more things I want to say, and I'm sorry I'm rushing it here a little bit, but as we approach Shavuos, you know, probably the main concept is we hear again is the Nasa V'Nishma. And to me that sounds a little bit silly. I mean, what is Nasa V'Nishma? We said Nasa V'Nishma. Nasa V'Nishma basically is what every parent expects from their kids. Right? Parent tells their kid, go to sleep. And the kid's like, why do I have to go to sleep? And what does the parent say? Because I said so. Right? Nasa V'Nishma. Do it, because I said so. I mean, that's expected from every kid. Yet the Gemara in Shabbos talks about, right, that B'Shoah Shekdimu Yisrael Nasa V'Nishma, right, it does crazy, crazy stuff. A voice comes out from the heavens and says, Mi Gila Labanai, who revealed to my children, Ruz, the secret, right, the Malachi Asharis Mishtam Shimbo. And I don't understand what's the big secret of Nasa V'Nishma. And also, what does it mean that this is the secret which the malachim mishtam shimbo, the malachim use? Malachim, as we know, don't have bechira. They don't have choice. Right? So of course they're Nasa v'Nishma. They don't have a choice in the matter. That's how they're programmed. And the Gemara continues and says when Moshe goes up to Shemayim to receive the Torah, the Malachim say, what's the son of a woman doing here? And Hashem says to Moshe, I want you to answer the angels. Moshe says, answer the angels? Yisrafuni, they're going to burn me, behevel shebefihem, with the hevel of their mouths. Whatever, again, that means. Right? So Hashem then says, hold on to my kisei hakavod and answer them. Now, again, why is Moshe scared about being burnt by the angels? Hashem just told him, answer them. If Hashem tells you, answer them, you have nothing to be scared of. The angels don't have bechira, they can't burn you if Hashem doesn't want it to happen. And also, what's this idea of holding on to my kisei hakavod? Remember when I was a kid, we used to play tag, right? Like, you're it. But there was always like that one spot, home base, right? Where you couldn't be itted, right? So is that the kisei hakavod? Like, if you're holding on, it's like a safety fire zone, right? It's like extra cool air conditioning over there. How does that work? And then Moshe goes and lists off, you know, it says in the Torah, don't be jealous. Can you be jealous? Honor your parents. Do you have parents? I'm Hashem to get out of Egypt. Were you in Egypt? What exactly was the conversation over here? And I think if we can understand it, we'll pull out a very important idea. We find the words Hevel Shebefihem in another area as well. Anybody know where? Besides the Rosh Yeshiva? Tinoko Shel Beis Rabim. By little children. Little children, the words that come out of their mouth are Hevel Shebefihem. Gemara and Shabbos. Why is that? It's because they've never sinned. Therefore, their expression of Torah is so pure. Moshe wasn't scared of being burnt. Rather, what Moshe was saying is the angels are so pure. They've never done an Avera. They can't do an Avera. I'm not comfortable with you pinning me, Klal Yisrael, against that. How do I stand a chance, right, of going against their purity? And what was Hashem's answer? My kisei hakavod. Hold on to my throne. What is the concept of a throne? A throne represents the power, the kingship. Which is why it says that while a malik is still around, Ein Kiso Shalem, Hashem's throne, cannot be complete. Alright, because it represents total rulership. What shows Hashem's melucha in this world? An angel who doesn't have bechira? Or a little Torah Chiraga boy who chooses to do the right thing? What really shows how great God is and that God's running the show? An angel who doesn't have a choice, who does what he's programmed to do? Or that little Jew who does the right thing when he had a choice not to? Hashem wasn't saying, hold on to my throne and be safe. Rather, the answer is, Kisei Kvodi. The Maharal explains that an angel is an isolated Ratzon Hashem. When it says that they're mishtam shimbo, that they use it, it means that that's how they were made. They were made out of nasa v'nishma. But when a Jew chooses to do the nasa before the nishma, then we've won up the angels. And that's why the Gemara says that they came and they put crowns on our heads. They were mamlech us. Because when we're able to do the nasa before the nishma, we elevated ourselves over the angels. And that's what Moshe answered the angels. You may be perfect, but it's specifically because we were created not perfect that we're able to create that kisei hakavod, that we give Hashem his melucha. Nasa is a ratzon. It's not because I have to, it's not because I'm programmed to, but it's because I want to. And if we can leave here today with an understanding, I want to be Koveh Yitin LaTorah. I want to continue learning. I want to come back Shana Bet, or I want to go to college, but I want to continue learning. Why? Not because I have to. No one's forcing you. And that's the godless, I think, by the way, of guys who come back a second year, and the guys who continue to learn outside of Yeshiva, is that they're not doing it because it's a social trend or everybody comes. They're doing it because they chose to. Because they understand that they want to do this. Not that they have to. Sometimes they have to fight for it. But it's because I want to. And when a person understands and reaches that level where they say, I want to be a firm Jew because I want to, because I love to, because keeping Shabbos is awesome, because learning is Gishma, then you've elevated yourself to a whole new level. And then all the things that I started off talking about won't be issues for you. Because when you're living at that level of Nasa Vinishma, most of those obstacles are removed. You won't find yourself wanting to go out on a Thursday night. You won't find yourself feeling the urge to party, because you'll be living on a totally different plane. If it's okay, I just want to end with the story. I still have a couple of minutes. Right? Schneider was late, so it's fine. But there's a story. There was this rabbi, Rabbi Shiner, who taught fourth grade. And he was known to be a Rebbe who had tremendous passion and a love for learning, which he really tried to instill in his Talmidim. And in his fourth grade class, there was one boy who really stuck out. This boy's name was Yoel. He wasn't the smartest kid, but he was definitely the most devoted. Rabbi Shiner liked to say that he learns and davens like a chassid, but he's not from a chassidish family. And a few weeks into the year was orientation night, where the parents come, and the teachers get to tell over, you know, their plan for the year, what they're trying to do. So Rabbi Shiner goes and gives his pitch. And afterwards, when he leaves the classroom, one of the parents follows him out. And the parent's name, he introduces himself, his name is Mark Fernstein, and he says that he's Yoel's father. And this took the rabbi a little bit by surprise, because this man was dressed even a little bit more secular than the rest of the parents, you know, wearing jeans and a polo shirt. And he said, you know, I see my son really comes home from learning with you alive, burning. And I want some advice. How can I keep that fire going? So Rabbi Shiner looked at Mark Fernstein and said, very simple. Learn with it, kid. And when he said that, it was the wrong thing to say. Father shuts down. He's like, you know, what does he do during recess? But something stuck out in the rabbi's mind. He's looking very closely at Mark Fernstein, and it starts to bring back some memories. And he looks at him. He says, tell me, 8th grade, Torah Shalom, second to last row. You were there, right? And Mark Fernstein says, yeah, how'd you know? He says, you know, we were really good friends back then in 8th grade, but you had, you know, a little blonde payas, right? But I remember you left in the middle of the year. So Mark Fernstein is looking at Rabbi Shiner, trying to take away, you know, the gray beard a little bit. And he says, yeah, I remember you too. And I see that you went really far with your Torah education, unlike me. I'll tell you what happened to me. I'll tell you why I left in the middle of the year. See, I was in yeshiva, I was chassidish, but I had this Rebbe, we had this Rebbe in 8th grade. Every test I used to get 20s and 30s. And he used to punish me afterwards. Give me a potch. And one time, after one of those punishments, he told me, if you don't do well in your next one, I'm going to give you a punishment you're never going to forget. So he said, well, I didn't want to find out what that punishment was, so I left. So Rabbi Shiner says to him, you know, I also got 20s and 30s. And I hated that rabbi so much, and I was so angry at him. So I decided that I was going to be the best Rebbe in the world. Mark says, you know, I saw the system broken, so I left it. Yet you tried to fix it, and now look at you and look at me. It's too late for me. Rabbi Shiner says, no, it's not. It's never too late. And the parent leaves, and well, thoughts of, I'll think about it. A month later, Rabbi Shiner gets a phone call, and it's Mark Fernstein. He says, I want you to know, I bought a Mishnah at the Art Scroll, so now I can review it with my kid Yoel. And if you would have known, every night after that, there was a visitor outside of their house who was listening to father and son learning. And if you would have gone inside, you would have seen a new closeness between that father and son. You have two people who experienced the same exact experience, yet the outcome was completely different. And that's every single one of us in this room. You all went through a Shana Aleph together. Heard the same shmoozes, learned the same daf and gemara. Yet everybody came out with a different experience. And you have an option now, a choice to make. What are you going to take with you when you leave here, to wherever it is you're going? Rabbi Olshan likes to say, how many guys have pictures of them learning in the Beis Medrash? We all have pictures of going out with friends, and this one's birthday party, and that one's this. Is that the memory you want to walk away with from your year in Torah Traga? You know, Rabbi Akiva saw a rock, and he saw water hitting the rock. And he made a Kavah Chomer. If the water can penetrate the rock, right, then Torah can penetrate my soul. What would have happened had he not seen the rock? Ever think of that? He wouldn't have seen that. I'll tell you what would have happened. The 44 times his name is mentioned in the Yerushalmi, he wouldn't have been there. The 79 times Rabbi Akiva's name is mentioned in Tosefta, wouldn't have been there. The 329 times that his name is mentioned in the Mishnah, wouldn't have been there. And the 1,005 times that his name is mentioned in the Talmud Bavli, it would not have been there. Yet what did Rabbi Akiva actually learn from the Rock? The answer is nothing. The Rock did not teach him anything new that he didn't know. Yet he felt something for the first time. He was motivated and became driven. You need that ratzon, you need the nasa, you need to want it. You also have to realize that you're nothing without it. You might make all the headlines wherever you're going, but you're nothing without Torah. And that's nasa v'nishma, that's what Shavuos is about, and that's what the Seer was about. And that's what you have to take away with you to wherever it is you're going. And Amir Tzah Hashem, if you keep that ratzon, that nasa with you, it will always be there with you no matter where you go. And Amir Tzah Hashem will see good things from everybody.